Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
You know, it's hard to shake a bad reputation. In everywhere, right? You may have that friend that, you know, he's your friend, but you're like, yeah, I kind of got to grow up a little bit. And he tells you, hey, I'm really trying to settle down, trying to slow my life down a little bit. But then he's still going out all the time and staying out late and hungover. And he's like 40. And you're like, dude, you sure about this? But then he starts taking some action and you're like, okay, prove it. Prove
you
going
to talk about me on air like this?
Hey, listen, you do what makes you happy, my friend. You do what makes you happy.
I wish I was still living like that.
But like, honestly, when you look at the Commanders, and you know we're looking at these, you know, the top 10 wide receivers and Jaden Daniels out of the top 10 and quarterbacks and all that. Really, Laremy Tunsil's been the only one that's been in the top 10 of anything so far, and I get it, and it was well deserved for him to be there. I really do believe that it is going to take a significant amount of time for the Commanders to shake the reputation that's followed them into this new era. It is a new era, it is different, but they still have to do it on the field. Which is the whole goal, right? You can say whatever you want about what you care about the fans. And again, like I absolutely believe that ownership, everybody top to bottom, this is, they're doing the right thing. They're going in the right direction. We saw the report cards. I actually really like those report cards matter to me, what the NFLPA puts out, because that's actual players on the inside telling you what it's like to be a part of an organization. And they were at the very bottom getting F minuses, which isn't a grade that actually exists. But yet, the minute Josh Harris and this ownership group takes over, A's and A pluses about just everything in the culture. And culture does matter. And you kind of have to start building that foundation before you can continue to show the rest of the league, show the rest of the NFL, show the media, show your fan base, show other fan bases that things are different, that you've grown up, that you've changed, that it's better. That Dan Snyder's somewhere around the world in his yacht hiding from everybody because nobody ever wants to see him again, and that he's so far away from this organization that the stench of the Dan Snyder era has finally been eradicated, and they've power-washed everything that's stuck on the walls in Ashburn out the door so it's finally clean and it's fresh. That's what you have to be. And look, I really do believe that it is going to take time, but they are going in that direction. But it feels like right now, and I think this is fair, by the way, what I'm about to say, but it feels like right now, 2024 and the 12 wins and everything that happened that was good that year is seen as a fluke. You probably think that it's seen as a fluke at this point. I'm not in the category of, oh, this is going to be a really bad year for this team. I think high-end 10 wins for this team. Low end, probably about 6. We had Ryan Horvath on earlier. He thinks they're going over. Their win total is 7.5. And that's fair. Again, an 8-win season is not bad. It depends a lot. Obviously, health is the number one thing, and it starts with your quarterback. And then it trickles down after that. We understand that. But this team has the ability to really start to change, really, like truly, what their reputation is. I think it's going to take time. And I think that winning this season is going to go a very, very big direction there. But it's not something that you can expect to happen overnight. All right. Who is this? Is that, how do you say that name?
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Can you just say it for me?
He sounds like EDE or something. He says like Easy
Edie
E
in Rockville. Like, this
okay,
is.
I guess JP Finley gave him this nickname.
All right, Edie and Rockville. I wasn't able to say it. Are you mad about the Bam record here? I'm going to just go to you on this because we didn't get a chance. I ranted about this. I hate the 83 points. I saw him getting interviewed on the ESPYs. I can't stand it. Are you in or out on that?
Okay, so first to help you out, JP Finley gave me this name. Because okay. My name is Edward, but I tell him to just call me Ed. He said, look, we're just going to call you Eazy-E from Rockville. Okay.
Man, JP so is a like dope. Don't let him do that to you. JP is a dope.
No, but you know, I like the name. I like the name.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Because JP says and does things that we don't understand. So I think the word easy for me, because I do things that's easy and make sense. E, he does things that don't make sense, so I'll give him a nickname one day. Maybe it'll be dumb, dope, I don't know.
All right, but there you go. Swing it back his way.
but here's what I wanted to say about the Bam thing. To me, it's the dumbest 83 points there was. Oh. Here's why. I'm gonna take you back a little bit. When Kobe scored his 80-plus points, did he not score it when 130, 120, 115 points wasn't the norm? Like, mm-hmm. when Kobe scored that, the norm was like 95, 93, 97. It would be crazy if a team reached 105 points that in that era, because you probably woke up and was like, that team went to overtime at least once, maybe twice if they got to 110. For Bam to score to 83, that's the same night. Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that the same night that Miami scored like 150 points, but the Wizards still scored like 125, 135? So he did it in an era where close to 300 points, if you go to overtime or even close to overtime, and of course that night it wasn't, it's a norm. Kobe did it in a night where if he scored 80, any player scored 80 plus points, you were dirt trash on defense that night. Like, so he did it. It was harder to do it. Bam did it during an era where it's easy to do it. Most players score 40, 50 points at least once every month. So to get 83, somebody was going to do it. And you did it against the Wizards, who were tanking to get the number one pick and ended up getting A.J. DeBonson. Thanks for taking my call. I'm agreeing with you.
Man. Drop the mic. That was absolutely the perfect way to describe the 83 points from Bam Adebayo. Yet he's probably going to win best performance at the ESPYs. But it's so true. Like, again,
it's like shooting fish in a tank?
I think that's what he said. Which I know. It's usually in a barrel, but I actually kind of like
the
that
tanking,
better.
That's the joke.
I know. It's great. It's great. And by the way, fish are in a tank, not in a barrel. So technically, I think that expression works more. Just a great call. But listen, the Bam Adebayo, see, now he's got me back on that. I was trying to move on, but now, because that was so, like, one, I'm not one of those people that there's a limit here to this. I'm not one of those people that gets mad at high-scoring NBA games, but it's to a point. When it's like 150, 148, no one's playing any defense. All right, it's a little bit much. The All-Star game was
so you're not enjoying the Summer League.
Summer League's just different, man.
There's no defense, though.
There's no defense. But here's the thing. Defense is becoming a priority in the NBA again. That is becoming a thing. It is not just about who can score the most. Teams are looking for players, unless it's Trae Young, that can play defense, and it actually matters in the league again. It's going to take time to really prioritize it, but the pendulum is starting to swing the other way with that. What makes it worse is that, like, Bam and what was going on, he was getting, like, quadruple teamed and going to the free throw line 1,000 times. And I think it's also, too, like, he just wasn't, again, he's like an 18, he's getting you, like, 18 points a game. Kobe was a scorer. That is a true scorer. And he did it in a way that an elite scorer would do it. I mean, were there some garbage points? Sure. Like, 81 points is good. Like, you're going to be padding the stats a little bit. It just will never feel. Like, no one will ever be able to look at Bam's 83 points and feel like he actually surpassed Kobe. It feels like empty calories. It just feels empty. So I'm with him. I think it was a great call, and it was a great way to put it. It was in an era it was a lot tougher to get buckets. Look, I mean, we all know that Kobe's one of the all-time greatest scorers we've ever had in the NBA. I mean, period. The closest thing we've ever had to Jordan was Kobe. And it will always be, I would actually argue, I'll even take this a step further, Kobe's 81 points will always be held in the highest regard for scoring performances in the NBA, even above Wilt's 100, because we have no video evidence. Well, we only have a picture.
Yeah, but here's the thing about Wilt Chamberlain, too, because I was just looking at the other people who have scored 70 or more points in a single game.
Yeah,
which
David Robinson's
several.
Up
There's
there.
Several. Yeah, David Robinson, George, Elgin Baylor.
George Gervin, I think, too, right? No, just Elgin Baylor. I thought George Gervin had a 70-point game.
I don't think he did. Jordan had a 69, but never broke 70. I know Dame Lillard did. Devin Booker did. But I was looking at the list. There's like, I think, let me count on me real quick. Hold on. There's like 8 or 9 of them, right?
Right. You're counting now.
Yeah, there's like 10 of them. Sorry, the mic is just right. Too far from the screen for me to read. My eyes aren't that good.
Well, I mean, it's Wilt 1,000 times. Is that where you're going to go with this?
Wilt has 6 of them, a 70 or more, man. Like, I don't know. That's like... I don't know. It's the record comparison is kind of like Gretzky scoring 80 goals in a season kind of thing. Like, there's other guys that did it like once, and Gretzky did it like 6 times.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Like, I don't know. You can't. I don't know. It's hard to say that anyone's scoring is better than what Wilt was doing. I mean, he averaged over 50 points in a season once.
I know, and I'm looking at the all-time highest scoring games in NBA history.
He didn't even win MVP that season.
I know. I know. But it's like, it's wilt across the board, right? The, not just the 100, but, you know, 78, 73 multiple times, 72. You keep going down, and, you know, you got a Devin Booker 70 game. I remember when Embiid scored 70, and then, you know, wilt again at 70.
Nobody else has more than one, and he's got six.
Right, and it's so. Wilt Chamberlain at 68, and then 67 five times, and then 66, and I get it. Like, it basically everything from, like, 50 on, he's done it multiple times. It also was just a different era. Like,
sure.
I'm not going to be the it's kind of true, but the whole, like, he's played against plumbers and electricians. I mean, yes and no. There was talent in the NBA in the 60s, but Wilt Chamberlain was just above and beyond all of them. But if you were to take Wilt Chamberlain in the way that he played and dropped it in the 90s NBA, he wouldn't be doing that. He wouldn't be able to – he wouldn't bang around as much with –
I mean, like, that's like saying Babe Ruth wouldn't be good now.
And that's
– but, like, I don't know. It's hard to say that.
So you and I talked about this last night, and I think that that's really where I am. We're like, in the end – if you take a player and try to say, well, Wilt Chamberlain couldn't play in this era, or Jordan couldn't play in this era, or Steph couldn't play in this era, okay, well, is that player the game that they are that they have developed over their entire lives, that they've built, and they've worked
could
towards building?
Could Shohei Ohtani go back and smoke cigars and chug whiskey in the dugout and do what Babe
probably.
Ruth was doing too?
Yeah,
like, you know, it's a different era, man.
While he's working with his bookie that nobody ever wants to acknowledge? Yeah, that's
I'm just saying, like, there were different factors both ways. You know, it's just a different era.
But, like, the question would be, okay, so you take Wilt Chamberlain. Does he grow up in the 90s and develop his game that way to play in today's era? Or, you know, is it Wilt Chamberlain? You pluck him from 1962 and you drop him into today's era. Like, you know what I mean? It's like guys trained based on the way the game was played in those eras.
Dude,
as
I would
well.
Have killed to see Wilt go up against Shaq.
I know. That actually would have been. I think Shaq would have pushed him around, man. Shaq has just bullied everybody.
Sure, but Wilt was like a better player, like a better like scorer and athlete, I think. You know what I mean? Like, not that Shaq isn't a good athlete or whatever, but like, I just think.
Also, let's not forget that Luka had a 73-point game, too.
Yeah, man.
So, Donovan Mitchell had 71. I forgot about the Devin Booker 70, because didn't they do a picture of him holding up a sign that said 70 and people ripped him for it because it was copying Wilt?
Yeah, but I mean, come on. I'm a Suns fan. I was all about it.
Some of these, man, you go down. I mean, look, it's even like, go down this list. It's just Wilt Chamberlain just crush. I mean,
that's
62.
What I mean. How are you going to say that there's no other scorer like Kobe when Wilt's on that list so many times, man?
But again, then, like... Kobe's way of scoring, his elite skill set, is just beyond what Wilt Chamberlain was. But Wilt Chamberlain played in an era where guys were playing at the rim the entire time his side. So that's what, again, this is why I hate this argument, because in the end, it's like, if you're really taking a true side, you're not. It's disingenuous. Like, it really is to just go, Wilt Chamberlain was not as good of a player as, well, I mean, okay, but what era was he playing in? It's just, again, Wilt Chamberlain was in his own world when he played. I recognize that. But it was also in an era where there was just nobody that could meet him at the rim that was truly like a rival. And I mean, yeah, Bill Russell, obviously, but, you know, that's there wasn't a lot of that. You just didn't have as many skilled bigs at that point in the NBA. And now every big plays like a point guard. Dude, I was watching highlights of this kid in high school.
That's for
days.
Now, though. There's all these changes. Like, in another 20 years, who knows what the trend's going to be.
Right.
You know?
I mean, look at all the guys that are out there. I mean, look at Wemby. There's other kids coming up, too. There's a guy that's 7'7". I was watching stuff on him today. And he's, I mean, it's, there's a guy that plays for, like, it, I mean, it's Duncan Flatfooted. He's 7'8". I think he plays for India or something. I don't know if he's coming over here. Just looked like he just kind of stood in front of the rim and dunked flat-footed. But, like, you know, people are getting bigger and stronger, and then they're developing better games in basketball because you're training to be a 7-footer that can play like a point guard. It's just, like, imagine, let me tell you something.
Well, like, Wembanyama always reminds me, like, physically of, like, Sean Bradley.
Now, he's a far
better talent than
he's
Sean Bradley.
He's 2 inches shorter, and he's just as skinny.
Sure,
yes.
But, like, he's got that, like, look and lanky and, like, all that, you know? But, like, if you look at their skill sets, it's not even close.
Well, let me
know?
Ask you this. If you were to take Victor Wembanyama and drop him into 1962, where Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points.
They didn't even have a three-point line back then.
What's Wemby doing, though?
But they didn't even have a three-point line back then. So it's not more
like,
efficient
Wemby's
to take
not,
threes, so they weren't growing up taking threes. Like,
but it's not Steph shooting, like, 9, 10 threes a game. Wemby's putting up some threes, but Victor Wembanyama's running the court with the ball in his hands, going coast to coast, dunking on you like Jordan in Space Jam.
But also, like, yeah, but the game's in the way that, like, if Wembanyama's standing outside in the corner on the three line, you're like, well, that's still a threat. Whereas if Wilt Chamberlain's doing that, they're like, what the hell are you doing outside of the lane?
Yeah, and that's my point, right? The eras are completely different because the rules are different, the game is different, everything's different. And that's why, honestly, I hate the argument. Like, we do it. I fall into the trap. I've literally done it here now. But really, like, comparing bigs in the 90s, like Hakeem Olajuwon, one of the greatest post scorers we have ever seen in the NBA, doesn't get enough credit for how good he was. But yet, in today's NBA, he wouldn't be as valuable because now he could shoot.
I saw the Dream
point,
play live, man. I oh, give that so guy good. Credit.
Oh, I am. Hakeem is one of the all-time great bigs.
Oh, for and sure, man.
I don't think gets enough credit for how good he was. But, yeah, it's just, again, I mean, it's Wilt across the board on all of these records. I understand. But, you know, it's, I'm trying to see if there's, like, any surprises on here. Who would be some like one of the biggest surprises?
Bam.
I'll give you
Bam Adebayo.
No, but like even going down like I don't know, this is too far down, it won't show up on here, but like actually I will tell you the biggest high scoring output game or one of the biggest we've ever had would be Tony Delk years ago. I think he was averaging like 8 points a game and he put up 50 when he's playing for the Kings. There's a trivia question for you. I can't remember what year it was now. But you occasionally have those one random guys that just score out of the blue and have one of these games where you go, where did that come from? There's Gilbert on there. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember Linsanity.
Well, yeah, that's true. But that was like, I mean, he didn't put up 60 in a game, though.
Yeah, but that was like a month of him just like dominating the NBA, and then he just kind of disappeared.
Man, I remember going, when the Knicks came to town and played the Wizards, I remember going to that game, and it was just like so many Knicks fans with Jeremy Lin jerseys already, and it was just like out of nowhere. You're looking around going, how did this happen so fast?
Well, remember Kobe Bryant was like, I don't know who he is or whatever, yep, ahead of the Lakers game.
Yeah. Man, Linsanity actually is probably one of the coolest stories we've ever had in the NBA because it just came out of nowhere and it was, I mean, anytime you thought he's going to fail here, like the game winner against the Raptors and, you know, you just watch him and it's like, is he possessed by Kobe Bryant? What happened? Where did this come from? One of my favorite NBA stories of all time was Linsanity.
Yeah, it's just so weird that it happened and then just went away. Like,
just went away.
It wasn't like a game, you know?
Usually
just
guys
like
that
games.
Level out a little bit, but they still have like a consistent career after that.
Yeah.
And it's like he signed with the Rockets, got a nice deal, good for him, and it was like he's getting like 11 a game and that's it. And then that was it.
Yeah, it's like he just kind of went back to what he was and
right.
That's fine, but like it's just so weird to see a player have a hot moment like that.
There was a guy on the Pistons, I can't remember his name. It was probably 2 years ago. He had a 50-point game, and I can't even remember his name. I'm not going to sit here and search it, but you know, hey, you have those. Malachi Flynn, got it already. There you go. There's one of your most unique high-scoring performances from a player. Tony Delk, Malachi Flynn for the Pistons. Oh, Sadiq Bey had a 51-point game in 2022. I forgot about that. So, yeah, you have these random guys that just, it happens out of the blue, and you're like, what? But, yeah, I remember the Malachi Flynn now. It was April 3rd, 2024 against the Hawks. He came off the bench, only the third player in NBA history to score 50-plus points as a reserve. Malachi Flynn. That might be your most, or Tony Delk would be the other one. That's it. So every once in a while, you have these random moments where some guy comes out of nowhere.
Did they win ESPYs?
They did not win ESPYs, though. Bam Adebayo is probably going to win an ESPY tonight.
No, they got to give it to Shohei. Come on.
Probably will be.
That was in the playoffs, too, so it's not even like they're playing nobody, you know?
I will be so mad if Bam Adebayo wins best single-game performance with that 83-point game. But it's possible. It's possible, man. I'm gonna throw something across the room if that happens. I'm going to be so mad. But you're right. It should be. But see, here's the thing. I'm like looking up the nominations here, and it's just like here are people with like the different nominations for like individual names. I just want to know. Yeah, best single game performance is there for Shohei as well. So yeah, I think he probably wins that. Do you have the? You don't have the stat line. You didn't look at what it was, did you?
For Shohei?
Yeah.
I can pull it up real quick. I just remember it was like the talk of the town for the
next 3 days.
Well,
I think that's honestly, because
you know?
That to me, like that is a true like historic performance because I think it was 10 strikeouts, 2 home runs, and like 6 or 7 RBI, something crazy like that in the playoffs. Because that's the thing too, is it's one thing to do it in one, like right, 10 strikeouts, great. It's another thing to hit a couple of home runs in a game. Big performance. To do both at the same time, that's what makes Shohei Ohtani the greatest baseball player of all time, and one of just the greatest athletes of all time. He's able to do it in a way, Nick, no one else is doing this. Travis Hunter.
All right, I got the stat line now.
All right, what is it? What is it?
It was game four of the NLCS, and he had 3 for 4 with 3 home runs, which was 3 RBIs.
It was 3.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
And on the mound, he threw 6 shutout innings and struck out 10 batters and allowed only 2 hits.
When I said 2 home runs, I was like, wait, was it 3? Yeah, I was like, wait, was it 2 or 3? And I went with 2, and I was wrong. It was 3 home runs.
I knew it was at least 2, because it was outstanding on both ends, I remember.
Yes. So. It was like elite performances to do 1, but he did it on like as a pitcher and as a hitter.
Yeah, in the NLCS.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, he has to win over the 83-point game.
Yeah, it's got to be.
And people aren't going to vote. People, because that was like a genuine moment. That was authentic. Bam's feels empty. It's empty calories.
Well, also, I'll tell
points.
You don't even have to be like a Dodgers fan to see what Shohei did. It's just like, that's some amazing history.
Right.
But like, who was like that about that for Miami or what? You know, it's like.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, you're, it makes me sick to my stomach thinking of Bam scoring 83. Nothing personal against him. I just don't think he deserves to go past Kobe. It's just, I hate it. It is what it is. And you know what? I don't blame them for going for it, him going for it at all. And if you're, you know, Eric Spoelstra, the Heat head coach, what are you going to do? Of course you're going to be like, we're going to go for this. We absolutely do. You focus on your players. The rest of the NBA hates it. Shohei Ohtani, I hope you win tonight. Let's go ESPYs. Metal Chris is a big fan of them. Big fan of those ESPYs tonight. Nick Cashew on the Fan.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Ashew on the Fan. Who do you think wins best team tonight at the ESPYs? Yep, that's what we're down to here, folks. The Aces, the Dodgers, the national champion Indiana Hoosiers, that's still weird to say, Carolina Hurricanes, the Knicks, Texas Longhorns, NCAA softball, the Seahawks, U.S. men's hockey, U.S. women's hockey. I know you're a huge fan, obviously, of the ESPYs, Metal Chris, because
We've talked about. You just know me. That's what I love.
Who do you think wins that?
What are you talking about? Best team?
I think it's going to be the Knicks.
Yeah, I feel like they're real hot right now. If it's not them, it would be the Indiana football, because it's such a weird thing for them to be good at football.
But like that, I mean, I don't even know. Okay, so how does it even? This is a serious question, because you can vote for the ESPYs, but is it just the voting that ESPN.com,
I bet it's like All-Star games where they have people that are also like the reporters, their votes count more or something, you know.
Right. It's something like that, isn't it?
I don't know. You don't get the reporter slip for all that stuff?
Nobody does. I think it's just look, I feel like it's going to be the Knicks, because I was just wondering when voting ends, and like was the wave of the Knicks winning their first title in 53 years, does that carry over to the voting and all? I think it's got to be the Knicks. It's just hard not to, given the story and given how they just took over the entire country and they were dominating on social media, and it was just, you know, the parade and everything that's there. I feel like it's got to be the Knicks that win it. Maybe it's the Hoosiers, because that was a cool story, but it just feels like that's cooled down a little bit. But again, I don't know how the voting works to determine it. It feels like it's going to be the Knicks. That's my guess.
Knicks
anyway.
Seem, just because they're so recent, but also that Indiana football thing it's tough. I don't know.
All right, so best single-game performance, we were looking at that before. I think it comes down to...
You're down for Bam all the way, I'm sure.
Oh, God, I just don't even want to think about it. You've got a college baseball performance, Notre Dame basketball, Hannah Hidalgo, most steals in a game, which was 16, which is pretty incredible, but it's just, even Bam, first off, again, empty calories there with those 83 points. It's got to be Shohei Ohtani, right? Pitched 6 scoreless innings, struck out 10 batters, hit 3 home runs.
He's in a bunch of categories, and I wouldn't be surprised if he just starts cleaning up tonight. So.
Yeah, I feel like Shohei's going to be in quite a bit of that. Best college athlete, though, Cam Boozer, Fernando Mendoza, Mitchell Messenbrick, who's a Penn State wrestler, and Donovan Phillip, NC State soccer. No A.J. DeBonsa in there. They gave it to Cam Boozer as the one basketball player. Cam Boozer had an awesome season at Duke. I don't think people realize how great Cameron Boozer is going to be. He is going to have a phenomenal career in the NBA. He may not be as flashy as somebody like a DeBonsa or a Peterson, but he is going to be really, really good. Look, DeBonsa and Peterson are going to get compared to each other no matter what. This is just how it's going to work. Same thing with, you know, the top three quarterbacks in Jaden Daniels' class. They're all going to be compared to each other, those guys specifically. The Peterson-DeBonsa rivalry, and they've talked about it, right? It's like Darren Peterson's compared to Kobe, and then A.J. DeBonsa's compared to Tracy McGrady. Big Tracy McGrady fan I am right here. Wish he could have stayed healthy more. That career, his career would have been even better. It would have been nice to see him win a title. But, you know, those guys are going to be compared to each other their entire careers. But that doesn't mean that Caleb Wilson and Cameron Boozer and some surprise guys in this draft, too, aren't going to have really, really good careers, too. I think when it's all said and done, this 2026 NBA draft class will be the greatest draft class we have ever seen, and it'll be hard to surpass. It is that good. You're going to have second-round picks that are going to have great NBA careers. But, you know, the A.J. DeBonsa, Darren Peters thing, it's natural. This is how it's always going to be. And it's, look, they're going to have ups and downs this year. They just are. You're going to have stretches where Darren Peterson shoots the ball poorly, where A.J. DeBonsa disappears in games, and we're going, where's A.J. DeBonsa? Why did Trae Young take that last shot and miss it? Or whatever the case is. We're going to live in the moment, and it's natural, and it's, you know, they understand the assignment. They know that it's not going to be perfect. We have to understand that there is going to be a level of inconsistency from them. The one thing that not every great, you know, college basketball player, but some certainly do, they struggle at first shooting in the NBA. The three-point line's farther back. Defenses are different. You know, the game speed is different. You're just playing against better players. It's just as simple as that. I mean, it's really just about the improvement that's there. You don't want to see, like, if DeBonsa comes out and he's shooting, like, 38% from the field for the season and averages like 12 points, then we're going to be like, uh-oh. But I don't think that's going to happen. And don't say, well, look at Summer League. Don't use Summer League as a reference to think that that's going to carry over to other things. But my point is that as long as you see moments of greatness and a level of consistency that's a relatively high floor, they're both going to be most likely Hall of Famers. Like, that's how talented they are. And really, that could be what it ends up being. I know this may seem crazy because we love to have either or in everything that we do, and I fall victim of it too sometimes. I get it. There is just a chance that Darren Peterson and A.J. DeBonsa both have just Hall of Fame careers, and they're both really good. And we can look back and go, you know what? Darren Peterson was great. If the Wizards drafted him, I would have been happy. But A.J. DeBonsa, glad they drafted him. Could be that simple. To the point where we're comparing like MVPs or championships or whatever. I mean, that's really what it could come down to. Look, the odds of everybody succeeding in the top of a draft are rare. It just is. It's a numbers game. That's usually how it works. Somebody doesn't live up to the hype. There is a chance that is going to be the case with this group at the very top. They're just going to have different games, different careers. I mean, it's going to be a little different. Caleb Wilson in Summer League is going out there doing things he didn't do at North Carolina because he's been given more freedom. Now, does that carry over with the Bulls? Probably, because they have no talent on that roster. The good thing for A.J. DeBonsa is that, like, he is the face of the franchise, but he is not expected to be and shouldn't be considered the guy that you think is going to be the leading scorer, the guy, their number one option. He doesn't have to be. Now, can he? Sure. Does he have to be? No. You pay Trae Young $212 million, he needs to be the number one guy on this roster. He needs to go out there, shoot the ball well, go get you buckets, get you assists. No, he's not going to play
defense.
He's
not Jaden Daniels. I mean, that's the thing. He doesn't like, it's not like, oh man, everything rests on him now.
Right. A.J. DeBonsa is the face of the franchise and has high expectations and responsibilities, but it's not like he has to go out there and carry the team by himself. Yeah, quarterback's just a different animal. That's why quarterbacks make so much.
Yep.
Because
Daniels has a bad year, the team's having a bad year. Jaden Daniels has a great year, team's having a great year.
That's literally been the story of Jaden Daniels' career through the first two seasons. It's just
that,
what you
I have
just
a feeling
laid
that
out
will
there.
Be the story of his career in D.C.
I mean, it's, you know, you get to a point where, you know, it's almost a detriment to the NFL that quarterbacks are so important that it literally dictates an entire season for a team. But that's the world we live in. And it's gonna be hard to change that.
It's not just quarterbacks. I mean, you're seeing everything else. The Knicks, what, two most probably important positions are left tackle and edge rusher, and that's all because of the quarterback as well.
Yeah.
Like,
so I've always said this. It's either the quarterback or positions connected directly to the quarterback. So like left tackle or, you know, a defensive end, edge rushers that get after the quarterback. It all still centers around the quarterback. That's it. I mean, that's it. And if Jaden Daniels, if Jaden Daniels has a season this year where it's like last season, it's going to be a bad, bad situation for this team. And again, a lot of it's health. There's only so much you can do to control that. But he has got to be somebody that carries and elevates this offense, especially because, again, they're lacking some talent on that offense. Offensive line kind of found, I think, a decent setup. But it's another thing when you're looking at the wide receiver group and going, it's Terry McLaurin and question marks at running back. I mean, what's the running back situation look like? Bill and who, right? I like the Catron Allen pick, but he's a bruiser. That's a short yardage back that you're going to have. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt is supposed to be your guy, right? Like, they hyped him up last year. He's supposed to be the guy that, I'm not saying he's a third down back, I'm not saying he's every down back, but I am saying is he should be getting a lot of touches every single week. We've seen flashes, but you got to have it consistently. And, I mean, it does all fall on Jaden, but is it just going to be him trying to carry this team like Superman? He can't, like, if he's Superman and he's running for his life, you got a problem. You can't have that. I know that it's there. You can't clip his wings, but you can't allow Jaden Daniels to be in a position where he has to carry this offense and he's running the ball 12, 14 times a game and he's throwing the ball another 35 because that's where mistakes happen. And that's also where injuries happen. And look, we're all going to be nervous anytime he runs. It's just, we're all scarred. We've seen it with one quarterback. We're going to see it again. We're all just going to be, oh God, he's running. Oh no. I mean, happened all last year. Hell, it happened his whole rookie year. I was scared to death every time he ran. It may just be a personal problem, but it is what it is. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What if LeBron James announces at the ESPYs where he's going to his next team? Like the next decision.
Where he's taking his talents to?
Where he's taking his talents to. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We're still waiting. Clock
what if he
ticking.
Takes his talents to ESPN and becomes a commentator? And this is how we find out.
Can you imagine? If that's all it was, he's just like, I actually decided to retire. All this was fun, but I'm done.
He's like, me and Bronny are going to be the new, you know, show host for Inside NBA.
Well, it's like when NBC was like, we're going to have Michael Jordan on. It really was just clips of an interview that Mike Tirico did. And we're like, oh, that's all that it was. Yeah, they sat down and interviewed him. It was cool, but, you know, it wasn't like he really had Jordan as like sitting on set breaking down games. You're not going to get LeBron doing the same thing ever. But look, Cavs, Heat, Sixers, Warriors, even the Timberwolves are thrown out there. I'd cross the Timberwolves off. I don't think the Heat is really going to. Like, the only team that makes sense, it makes sense from a narrative perspective, and it's the Cavs. But, you know, I mean, we can talk about fit, and we can talk about roster, and we can talk about finances and all that, which are all things you have to think about. But it's not going to win a champion. He's not going to win a championship with any one of these teams. It's going to be the Spurs with Thunder next year. I don't think the Knicks are going to win again. I don't think any team out of the East can do it.
You didn't think they could this year either, and the Knicks did.
No, it's just going to be hard because here's the thing.
The Spurs
looked like a young, scared team for a majority of the NBA Finals. They now are more prepared mentally what that moment is.
I hear you, but still, it's a big mountain to climb. You can't always get back so easy, you know?
That's true, but again, that's what we're saying. So the same thing applies to the Knicks, though, right?
Sure, but I'm not saying it's necessarily the Knicks in the East either. I'm just saying it's very hard to make that statement that no one in the East is going to be able to beat either of those teams when they both, you know, Knicks are on top right now.
Is there a team right now in the East that you trust? And let's take the Knicks out of it. They're the defending champs, so we take them out of the mix.
But see, like, you're looking at it like calculus and trying to figure out, like, you know, there's this many percentages or like whatever.
I didn't talk about percentages. You are making up words.
I'm just like, you're looking at it like basically, oh, who do you trust is basically saying like who is more likely in these situations. But here's the thing, man. In sports, and you've followed sports enough, never say never, man. Just never say never.
Okay. But I will say never.
We saw Argentina come back two goals or score two goals in the final minutes today. Like, it stuff can happen, man. Like,
okay. That's in the span of 7 minutes, though, versus an entire NBA season. Here's who I'm going to say never for next year.
Man.
Metal Chris, here's who I'm going to say never for in the Eastern Conference next year, right off the bat. Wizards, Nets, Bulls, Bucks, Heat, Hornets, Magic, Hawks, Celtics. I don't think the Celtics are going to win. They've downgraded this past season. Pistons, they need a number two. They're not there. I've eliminated a majority of the Eastern Conference. Maybe
but a major injury somewhere and a major trade somewhere else. Like, things can all change, man. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but we can only go with what we're looking at with rosters. Right?
Well, no, we can't. Because
saying
that no one can beat these teams, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, stuff can change. Stuff can happen.
Listen, if you told me that in the middle of the season, Nikola Jokic gets traded to the Celtics, then yes, I'm going to change my opinion. But that hasn't happened, so I can't operate in a reality that doesn't exist.
My point is just never say never. I'm not going to count out the entire East against those two teams. I'm sorry.
We
just saw the East win. Like,
yeah.
I can't.
Good. Listen, it is. I am glad that you are that way. Here's a team that I would say is a sleeper in the East, only because they were in the finals 2 years ago, the Pacers. The Pacers were in the finals 2 years ago. I think that's a team that's going to, I mean, we knew they were tanking. They were tank for them without question. That was their goal. So, you know, with Tyrese Halliburton healthy, maybe that's a team that can come out of the East and surprise. I mean, really, it's probably the Knicks. I mean, I like the Sixers. I think they're better now with Jaylen Brown at this point because he's going to play more games than Paul George. But what do you get from Joel Embiid? Is it going to be the same thing again? If you get Joel Embiid against the Celtics in the playoffs, well, okay.
Well, what happens if the Sixers get hot like the Knicks did this year?
That's what I'm saying.
This year's the Sixers, and they just get hot, though. Like, they just get hot at the right time. Everybody's healthy, hot at the right time.
Embiid's not going to make it through the playoffs, though. He will get hurt.
I don't know.
He will get hurt. Again, I'm going to look at the Knicks and say defending champs. So, of course, you put him in that mix. But after that, the Celtics have downgraded now. The Pistons need more. That's 60 wins. They're gonna fall back from 60 wins next year. I mean, the Raptors, if this Kawhi trade ever gets put through, Kawhi's not going to play enough games. It's really tough to look at the Eastern Conference right now. Anyway, Giannis isn't going to take that gutted roster past the play-in tournament. They won 43 games last year, gutted the roster, but added Giannis. If LeBron's even there, that ain't going to make a difference. There's just not a lot of teams in the East right now that feel like they're in that position where they're seasoned enough to understand what it takes to win in the playoffs, but also like on the rise. The Sixers are a team that we've seen this collection of most of them, minus Jaylen Brown, together, and we watch them fail in the playoffs year after year, or Joel Embiid gets hurt. I mean, Joel Embiid and the Sixers showed us what they can do if they're actually healthy, because when he came back against the Celtics, I mean, they came back from a 3-1 deficit. They won that series. That was a career-defining moment for Joel Embiid, and then they met the Knicks in the next round, and then they got their heads punched in. The Magic, no. Hornets, they were fun for a little while at the end of the season, but they've just changed that roster up. There's not a lot in the East. It's really not. Now, again, if the Pistons did something aggressive this offseason and brought in a legit running mate with Cade Cunningham, maybe that changes things a little bit. There's a possibility there. But the Cavs, no, I think the Cavs have already maxed out, even if they have LeBron. They could maybe get out of the East with LeBron if he's healthy at the end of the season. I mean, I just hate to say it, but it's going to be a lot of Thunder and Spurs for years to come, unless, again, something happens where Nikola Jokic asks for a trade or...
Well, Celtics, you know, will make moves. They never sit where they're not contenders. They don't like being not contenders, so...
So that's really what I want to see, is what else did the Celtics do this offseason? Because it's not like anybody looked at them getting Paul George and went, oh, that really worked for them. Yeah, they got picks, and it's down the road, and that's going to be more for the future. It shows that Jaylen Brown did not have that big of a trade market. So, do the Celtics do anything else? Brad Stevens is going to be aggressive, or try to be. So that's the thing, is do they do something else in terms of a big trade that really reshapes that roster? Do I think they drafted well? Yeah, they've added some pieces this offseason. It's not the Celtics are a bad team. The Celtics could win 53, 54 games next year. They won 56 last year. So, I mean, it's not like the Celtics are a bad team. It's just a question of, like, does Derek White, Paul George, Jason Tatum, and Mitchell Robinson... Is that a team that gets you out of the East with maybe more improved Peyton Pritchard? I don't think so. So, you know, what do they do? Chris Sanak, who they drafted, I think is going to be really, really good, but that's still a rookie. So it's, do the Celtics go after somebody? And is there going to be a star that asks for a trade at some point that the Celtics pounce on? And who is that? I mean, that's That's really what the question comes down to. But I don't know if we have any other stars right now that could be on the move. We've seen most of them. Seen pretty much everybody get traded.
We got an
epic
draft class coming in too that could shake things up too. So
what, next year?
Yeah.
No, that draft class is bad.
No, I'm talking about who's just been drafted.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. I was like, next year's draft class?
Next season,
this one.
They'll be starting as rookies, but like, I don't know. Somebody just could get hot.
Oh, dude, these rookies, I mean, we could see multiple guys averaging 20 points a game. Like, this rookie class is, like I said, it's going to probably go down as the greatest draft class that we've ever seen. But, you know, I'm just trying to think, like, are there – okay, so, like, here's a scenario. Let's just say, and I know you'll hate this, let's say Devin Booker wants out of Phoenix and the Celtics trade for him. Okay, that adds a real dynamic.
Man, you're trying
to go
after my heart now, man.
I'm sorry, but I'm just saying, like, at what point does Devin Booker look around and say, I've done enough here in Phoenix?
Nah, he would go to L.A. with Luka.
Yeah, and again,
he's
I'm not saying...
Kardashian, he would totally go to L.A.
But that's what I'm saying. So, like, at this point, who would be the next... I don't know, we're operating hypotheticals, but, like, okay, does Kevin Durant want out of Houston, and then does he go to the Celtics? You know, like, what does it
Kevin
look
Durant
like for
ain't
Boston?
Winning another championship.
I don't think he is either. I mean, unless he went back to OKC...
He'd have to go to a team that, again, is already good enough to do that like that. But I just
OKC.
I just don't know that he even brings enough to make them better to push them over any hump, you know?
I mean, who else would even
do you
be
think
like...
KD is the answer to beating Wimby?
No, but it's another guy. Yeah, again, like, why would the Thunder mess with what they have? I wouldn't.
But also, like, he's not the guy that's going to fix that. Like, because right now, that's probably what they got to be looking at. Okay, like, what are we going to do to get around with Wimby? You know, we don't have it, like... They lost in seven. I know it could have gone another way, but it's like, what are you going to do to, you know, get around the Spurs?
Well, the Thunder the Thunder drafted at least to try and add to that,
sure.
You know, trying to get some size there. But
yeah.
You know, but yeah, like, again, the Thunder are a champion the way they're currently constructed. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if again, just because you brought it up, the Celtics making a trade, could they do something? Like, it's absolutely a possibility, but the question becomes
Thunder, like the epitome of youth, too. They're not just going to add some old veteran in the tail end of his career.
Yeah,
like,
the Thunder is different. Right. But I can't, there really isn't any, like, we've had all the stars that have now gone through the next wave of they want out. There's really nobody else that's there. Nikola Jokic is the guy that I look at next on the list. I think if Denver has another season where they lose in the first round, we're getting the early, like, sniffs of it. But it's just very quiet, and then it's mostly like, oh, he'd signed an extension. Oh, yeah, everything's fine. They've lost in the first round, and he looked really dejected after that. Like, does Nikola Jokic in a year want out? It seemed crazy with Giannis, and then Giannis finally got moved. It got dragged on.
I mean, do you think it would happen at the trade deadline?
No. I think it's at least another season, if not more. Yeah. And there's talk about him signing
an extension. If they have a bad start to this season, though.
Yeah, I mean, but I think even so, even if the Nuggets had a bad start to the season, they're not doing anything until, because they're going to try to sign him to an extension. They're not going to go that route unless it's just, they were like, again, the Bucks dragged it out for a reason. The Thunder are in the same spot, or the Nuggets are in the same spot, where it's like, this is our franchise guy. We can't let him go anywhere. So you're going to drag it out as long as you can. But I don't know. There's going to be somebody that wants to trade next. The question just becomes who? Nick Ashew on the Fan.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.